What's up, divers? Welcome into the Deep Dive Fantasy Football Podcast, where I take a deep analytical look at fantasy football and combine it with a common sense approach to lead us to some titles. I'm your host, Brandon Gabor, and before we get started, remember you can follow me on my main platform being Twitter at DeepDiveFF or on Instagram at DeepDiveFantasyFootball. With that being said, let's get to the content. What is up, divers? Welcome into another episode of Deep Dive Fantasy Football. We're going over the Carolina Panthers today. A very interesting team, lots of changes. Might be the first team that we're really diving into with a lot to look at. So this team did take me a lot longer than usual, but I will try to keep it short in my explanations because I know listening to a podcast and all the numbers and all that stuff can be a little much. So I'm going to just talk through it with common sense for you guys and try to make it easily digestible. So let's look at some of the changes the Panthers have undergone. There's been a lot, but it starts with the head coach, Dave Canales. They brought him over from the Bucks. You guys know I'm a Bucks guy, love the Bucks. I loved Canales. I thought Canales was our future. I thought he was our future head coach. I thought he was being groomed and he was gonna help continue to build a great offense for Baker, help Baker to continue to grow because he revived him and he revived Geno. And the second he left Geno, right? And Geno regressed last year despite getting a first-round wide receiver and a second-round running back. And then he comes over to Tampa, revives Baker, and now he gets to go do the same thing for second-year player, first overall draft pick from last year, Bryce Young. And I think he's going to be able to do a successful job. But let's talk about the offensive line first. They added two new starters to the offensive line, which is very poor last year. They added offensive guard Robert Hunt. They paid him $100 million over 5 years. And they added offensive guard Damian Lewis. They paid him $53 million over 4 years. So two left guard, right guard are locked down now. And they're going to be keeping, I think, I always forget, Ekwonu, I think that's how you say his name. They're going to be keeping him at left tackle instead of kicking him inside like many thought was going to happen. Then you look at their skill positions. They added wide receiver Deontay Johnson, really good add. The biggest thing that Bryce needed was separation. They drafted wide receiver Xavier Leggett in the first round, somebody I was very high on, higher on than consensus for sure in terms of my eval of him. I had him at wide receiver 6. Most people did not have him there. They had him more around like 10, 11 range. So I had him higher than most, and then he went in the first round, so that made me feel good about the evaluation that I had. And then they added running back Rashad Penny, just as some depth there. Those are some of the big additions on offense. And then defensively, they lost defensive end Brian Burns. They lost, which that was just a whole mismanagement of that situation. If they were not going to keep him or franchise tag him, they should have traded him during the season last year when they were getting offers of multiple firsts, but they screwed that up. They lost defensive end Brian Burns. They lost linebacker Frankie Louvu. They lost cornerback Dante Jackson. They added linebacker Josie Jewell, and they added defensive end Jadeveon Clowney. So to me, looking at their defense definitely got worse because the edge rusher and the linebacker they lost are better than the ones they replaced them with. And then they lost cornerback Dante Jackson, and they didn't have much draft picks to work with in this draft. So when I'm looking at this situation as a whole for Carolina, it's still a tough team to work with, and it's still going to be hard to be extremely successful. If we're looking at 2023, they did run more plays than the NFL average, barely. Basically, they were right in tow, right in line with the NFL average. They had 1,031 plays. The average is 1,028. They passed the ball 57% of the time. They had 20 touchdowns. That is atrocious. They barely averaged more than a touchdown a game. They had the second lowest touchdowns on offense by far in the NFL. The only team that was worse than them was the Jets. The Jets had 18. For reference, other than the fact that the Jets were so bad, this 20 touchdown total for the Panthers last year, that would have been the worst mark last year as well in 2022. So we're talking about bottom of the barrel kind of offensive stuff we were working with last year. That's obviously going to come up. The NFL average for offensive touchdowns is 38. 38. We have people reaching high 50s and low 60s, and the Panthers had 20. So that's going to get better. There's no way it doesn't. 2022, They ran a lot less plays. They had 940. This was before Bryce Young. Obviously, they ran the ball more than they passed. They only passed the ball 49% of the time, but they had 32 touchdowns, a 12-touchdown difference on a pretty similar team overall. So going into this year with a lot of weapons added, a better offensive line, and Canales, which we're going to break down, it's going to get much better. There's going to be opportunity here for us to find some sort of value somewhere in fantasy. It's just going to be trying to figure out and decipher who are your fantasy values, which we will get into. Dave Canales with the Bucks. Let's talk about that for a second, because that's when we know 100% he was the offensive coordinator. With the Bucks, he had 1,007 plays, less than the average, 56% pass rate. Now, thinking of what he's going to do here in Carolina, I think it's going to be a little bit, he likes that healthy split. He likes to balance the offense out with a good run game. Now, I think that if the Panthers' defense is not able to step up, because one thing you have to remember about the Bucks, right? We're looking at offense, but in terms of how many plays you're able to run, defense plays a factor, and the Bucks have a good defense. When you're looking at the Panthers, their defense is not good. So if their defense isn't great, Canales is not going to be able to run with the same type of pace of play. He's not going to be able to run the same amount of plays because he's just not going to be on the field as long. So because the defense is just not getting off the field, the Panthers' defense is not getting off the field. So their time of possession will be lower. So if he keeps the same pace of play, which I expect, then he'll have less offensive plays total. So there's going to be a little bit less plays for the Panthers than what Canales did with the Bucks. Definitely less plays available than what the Panthers had last year, but that's okay because they're going to be way more efficient. And that's kind of Canales' calling card. That's part of his offenses, right? The Bucks, 1,007 plays, that's well under the average, except we were still a pretty decent offense despite not having that many plays. And then you look at his last year in Seattle, he was like bottom six in total plays ran, but that was when Geno was a Pro Bowler. Or I don't remember if he actually made the Pro Bowler, but he was a Pro Bowl candidate at least. And, you know, that was with bottom six total offensive plays, but it was because of high efficiency. So Canales is going to bring that efficiency here. That's the thing that is very good that we can look at and say, okay, we got something here. So also with him running the ball a little bit more, I think he's going to run a little bit more here than he did with Tampa, because when you're thinking about the situations, Carolina doesn't have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, right? They've got Deontay Johnson and Xavier Leggett, but they don't have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And then another depth piece in Trey Palmer and another depth piece in Cade Otton. And Rashad White is a better receiving running back than Jonathan Brooks. Like, it's a better receiving core in Tampa. So he's probably going to run a little bit more here. He's got better runners. Brooks is probably a better runner once fully healthy than Rashad White. And he's got some good backups there too that can play a role. So thinking about that as well, he's probably going to run the ball a little bit more. So I'm going to project 990 plays for this team. Okay, they had 940 plays in 2022, 1,031 last year. I'm giving them 990. Okay, but the touchdowns should go back up. If you look at the touchdowns for Tampa and Seattle, the last two places Canales was, they were both really good. Compared to the Panthers. He also had 56 and 57% pass rates, but the weapons were legit. We just talked about Tampa's and Seattle. Even though they didn't have JSN yet, they still had DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, right? Better situation than here. So because of the less weapons and a newly drafted running back, I think he's going to run more. But I'm going to give them 990 plays, a 55% pass rate, slightly under what Canales has been doing at 56 and 57. And 34 touchdowns opposed to the 20 they had last year. 34 touchdowns, two per game. That's what I'm looking at for this Carolina offense. What is the highlights? And then we'll get into the players. The highlights of this, to break everything that I've said down into like one sentence, better play calling and offensive efficiency, better offensive line that's 24th ranked, and better offensive weaponry. Development of the quarterback will start happening with Dave Canales. There will be a more balanced rushing attack, a slower pace of play, and more touchdowns. That's what we've got here. So let's break down Bryce Young. We've got 545 passes for him. His efficiency will go up. It is impossible for it to go down. He was yards per attempt in the fives. That is terribly atrocious. He needed separators most of all, and that's what he got. He got Deontay Johnson. He needed a big target that can go get it, right? And he got Xavier Legette, who I will be referring to as extra large because his initials are XL. So I think that's pretty unique. I think that's cool. This is going to be my guy, my name for him, extra large, right? They needed a big target that can go get it, and they got one. And then they also got Jatavion Sanders, who can also help you out in that way with those contested catches, with that big frame, that long length in the arms and stuff like that. He also needed protection, and they got two new offensive guards for interior help. He needed somebody that could train and develop him and call good plays, and he got the newest NFL quarterback guru, Dave Canales. Every single thing that's going on here is going to help Bryce Young get better. The whole purpose of all the moves is to find out if Bryce Young is the guy. And I think that he will be good enough to roll with him for a while. Now, I'm going to project for him well below the NFL average efficiency, but it's still going to be a massive improvement from what he had. And it's a little bit looking at Canales and what Canales was able to do for Geno and Baker. Also a little bit of looking at the natural progression of first round taking quarterbacks in a study that I did, right? And the average improvement for first round rookie quarterbacks from year one to year two in yards per attempt is 0.4. And overall, those quarterbacks average 7.2 yards per attempt. The NFL average is 7.3. So when you're looking at those, you know, quarterbacks that everybody looks at as, oh, first round quarterback, hell yeah. In their second year, they're just under the NFL average. I think Bryce Young will start approaching that, but not be right there, because despite adding two guards, it's still the 24th ranked offensive line. It's still not a great offensive line. They paid a lot to Robert Hunt. He's not nearly as good as they paid him, but he is an upgrade still. I'm going to give Bryce Young a 6.9 yards per attempt. He is the type of quarterback to me who's going to be high completion percentage, because he's accurate, deliberate, will be able to go through the offense, has his drops down pat. His footwork is going to be good with Canales. Canales is going to do this the right way. He's going to structure everything the right way, where things are breaking open on each drop or on each hitch and drop and all that stuff. It's going to be timed well. It's going to be what Bryce Young is good at. It's going to be in line with his strengths. He's going to hide his weaknesses. So Bryce Young is going to get better, and he's going to be a high completion percentage guy. I think he's going to be above the NFL average in completion percentage, but it's not going to be stuff that's very far down the field, especially not right now. Right now, Dave Canales is going to give him, you know, baby food and start saying, all right, let's get this easy stuff. Let's get you a pro at doing the easy stuff, and then we'll move you deeper down the field as we get better. And as our weapons, like Xavier Legette, extra large, as extra large develops and becomes a better route runner and is better down the field. He's really good down the field with the ball in the air. But once he is knowing the playbook and he's able to take that top off the defense and able to play that role even better, and we're more confident in him, and he's going into year two and you're going into year two knowing the easy stuff, the short, close to the line of scrimmage stuff, then we'll start going deeper down the field. I don't expect too much of that right away. So because of that, that's why I think he's going to have the high completion percentage. He's got a lot of good check down options. They're going to do a lot of stuff to get the ball into guys' hands and try to let them do stuff after the catch. And I think he's going to have a lower yards per completion. Geno Smith had 5.2% touchdown rate. Baker Mayfield had 4.9% touchdown rate with Canales. Both of those are above the NFL average of about 4.1 to 4.3, depending on the year. I think low fours in terms of touchdown rate for Bryce is pretty reasonable, especially because I think their emphasis on the run game and protecting him in that way is going to allow him to be more efficient with his touchdown to pass ratio. So I'm going to give him 4.1% touchdown rate. He's going to have 22 touchdowns. Geno and I feel pretty good about that. Geno and Baker both also ran the ball more with Canales than they did before. And if you look at Geno, then he did after, right? This past year, Geno ran for like 150 yards. The year before that with Canales, he ran for 350 or 300 something. I think it was like 350. And Baker also ran a little bit more with Canales too. So I think he's going to allow Bryce Young, try to give him the confidence. He has an ability to scramble, right? He's not the biggest guy. He's going to be sliding and trying to avoid hits and stuff like that, but he should do it a little bit more. So I'm going to bump his rushing 150%, give him one rushing touchdown. For Bryce Young, this is what we're looking at. 545 attempts, 370 completions, 3,758 yards, and 22 touchdowns. 60 carries, 330 rushing yards, and one touchdown. That's 16.4 points per game. That makes him a low-end quarterback too, but actually playable, which is a big improvement from last year. Last year, Bryce Young was not somebody that you could be playing in fantasy. He was killing you. 16.4 points per game, that's not going to kill you. That's a pretty good quarterback too. Low-end quarterback too, but still, nonetheless, a quarterback too. Deontay Johnson. All right, and this is the tricky part of this projection. A lot of times, and I am doing research, I did research to make sure that I didn't fall into this mistake. When I'm not sure about something, I'm always going to double check it. A lot of people look at Deontay Johnson and they immediately, because of his build, because of his efficiency metrics, stuff like that, if they're familiar with that off the top of their head, they automatically think slot receiver. Deontay Johnson is not a slot receiver. He has played that role at times, but that is not what he is. Okay, he had 20% of his snaps were in the slot last year. In 2022, 9% of his snaps were in the slot. He is not actually a slot guy. He is an outside guy. And when you think about the roles that wide receivers play in NFL offenses, the best wide receiver is usually, if they have another option to put in the slot, the best wide receiver is usually on the outside. Now, if it's somebody like, you know, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, somebody like that, that they just move around everywhere, then yeah, that person's also going to be in the slot depending on what they're trying to do on a given play. But in terms of a defined role, like you are the slot wide receiver, if you're the best wide receiver on the team, that's not usually the case. And Deontay Johnson is the best wide receiver on this team. And he hasn't played in the slot the past 2 years. It's not been the role he's been playing, and he's been good. And last year was his career high in efficiency outside. So when I'm looking at Deontay, he is their outside number one, and he will be their possession number one. Don't make the mistake of thinking he's going to be the slot guy. They have the guy for that. I don't think he's going to be that good, but they have the guy for that. 22% of the targets is what he drew in 2023. In 2022, he had 26% of the targets. As the clear number one here in this offense, he doesn't have a George Pickens across from him. I expect about 24% of the targets, because there's a lot of things they're going to be trying to do and a lot of guys are trying to get involved. So I don't think Deontay's going to get to that superior like 27, 28% target range. That's usually only for good wide receivers with nobody around them or elite wide receivers with good guys around them. And I don't think Deontay falls into either of those categories. I think he's a good wide receiver with decent people around him, because I like XL, extra large. So, which is Xavier Leggett. He's the only wide receiver on this team I think doesn't leave the field. I'm going to bring his efficiency from last year down. Like I said, it was a career outlier. It was a career high last year. I'm going to put him back around what he was doing before on a per-target basis. He's not a big touchdown producer. There's not much touchdowns to go around in the first place, but there never was in Pittsburgh while Deontay was there either. He's going to be a solid flex option in PPR with a floor that's safe from week to week. I'm looking at 131 targets for Deontay Johnson, 85 receptions, 977 yards, and 5 touchdowns. That is going to be 12.5 points per game. That makes him a high-end wide receiver 3, like I said, a solid flex option with a good floor. He's not the type of guy I would be looking at in best ball leagues. He is the type of guy I would be looking at if you need some safety. And let's say, you know, you have an explosive wide receiver 1 or an explosive wide receiver 2 that's kind of unreliable week to week, but can give you those huge games, you're going to want some consistency elsewhere. Deontay Johnson can bring you that consistency. I have him, like I said, 12.5 points per game. That puts him above Keenan Allen and below DK Metcalf for reference. As we continue with these projections, I'll be able to give you better insight on where they are. We're only like 6 teams deep right now, so that's why I'm giving you what I can. So he's above Keenan and below DK. Let's talk about Adam Thielen. Quick conversation here. He had 61% of the slot snaps in 2023. 61% of his snaps were in the slot in 2023. He had the most slot snaps of any wide receiver in the NFL. He will be the slot wide receiver. He is 34 years old this season. Hello, drop-off. It's been a while. Because that's what's coming. The age drop-off for Adam Thielen. In the study I did, I mention this on every podcast when it's applicable, but I don't know who listens to what podcast, so I got to say it over and over. The age drop-off for wide receivers is about 32.4 years old. That's like the average of when a wide receiver has a huge drop. Last year, because of there being literally nobody to throw the ball to other than Adam Thielen, he didn't have his drop-off. But his efficiency over the last 6 years, outside of last year, has been going down 5 years straight. Then last year, it went up a little bit, and he was the only guy getting the ball. But that's, I promise you, that's going to tank. And his efficiency is going to go down. Deontay Johnson is there. He's not the only guy there. And they drafted extra large. So they've got these two new guys there in the building. They brought in Jonathan Brooks. They brought in Jatavion Sanders. Thielen is going to be irrelevant, absolutely irrelevant this year. So he's not somebody I'm looking at. He had 24% of the targets last year. And also, he's working the slot, right? Dave Canales has not prioritized the slot. He prefers, instead of looking to the slot, he prefers prioritizing the running back and the tight end. And guess what? They have a new shiny person to play both of those roles in Jonathan Brooks and Jatavion Sanders. So I'm expecting 16% target share for Adam Thielen with bad efficiency. He will have the chance to lead the team in touchdowns. Okay, he's always been a nifty guy getting touchdowns. He has a chance to do that. But overall, this is not somebody I'm touching. This is not an explosive offense with a lot of touchdowns to go around. So that doesn't really matter that much to me. I'm looking at 87 targets here, 64 receptions, 572 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Like I said, unusable and little upside. Xavier Leggett, extra large, baby. What do we got here? Let's get it going. He will be the outside wide receiver. He will get schemed touches for his elite after the catch and tackle breaking abilities. He is so good with the ball in his hands. He is big. He is strong. He is a mix of, he's like a combo of DK and Debo, right? He's got some DK length, some DK straight line speed, not as fast, but he's got that size, that strength. He's got good straight line speed, big target to throw the ball to. He's built like DK in that strength. But then he's got the Debo combo of tackle breaking and get off me and getting stuff going after the catch and doing stuff with screens and stuff like that. And this is part of the reason, extra large is part of the reason why I think Bryce Young is not going to have a huge yards per completion, because I think Xavier Leggett, he's going to have his deep shots. But like I said, I don't think that's going to be the only thing he's doing. I think he's going to be getting these dump-offs, these screens here and there as well. Now, overall, I think he's going to have a very high yards per reception, because I don't think he's going to have too much of anything else. I think most of his game is going to be deep shots and then stuff close to the line of scrimmage. I don't think he's going to live in the middle of the field. I think they're going to leave that to the other wide receivers in this offense. So when I'm looking at him, I think he's going to be on and off with Mingo, because Mingo will come in to play the outside wide receiver sometimes with Deontay Johnson and Thielen in the slot. Xavier Leggett will come off the field at times. Okay, he's not going to just be on the field all the time. Like I said, Deontay Johnson is the only wide receiver that I think will be on the field the entire time for this team. Everybody else is going to be interchangeable. So with Mingo kind of sharing some of the outside work with him, I think Xavier Leggett's only going to get about 15% of the targets, but he will have rushing utility. And because of that, I think he is an interesting guy to look at in redraft. He's somebody that I like in Dynasty, but he is the type of prospect to me that we're looking towards the future. He's the slow burn. He's somebody that, like, I think Debo was a slow burn too, but like a lot of wide receivers that come in the league that maybe are not the most refined but have a lot of ability and show skills at the catch point, it might take a little bit. And I think that's what we're going to be looking at here with Xavier Leggett. So he's somebody that I like, but I don't have crazy expectations out the gate. If people do have those expectations, he might end up being a good buy low if he disappoints right away, because a lot of people are not that patient with wide receivers. I mean, JSN is getting sold for some ridiculous stuff right now because people think he's a bust because he didn't, you know, have great efficiency despite having a terrible play caller, and also didn't have a whole bunch of targets despite being buried behind DK and Tyler Lockett. But not to go on a rant of value and how people get lost in the sauce on, you know, people not producing right away, but to give you my expectations for Xavier Leggett, right? I expect him to have a low catch rate, high yards per reception overall, and to get 4 of the 22 touchdowns. I think he might get, you know, 1 or 2 screen touchdowns and 1 or 2 deep ball touchdowns. 2 carries a game with a couple touchdowns on the ground. I'm looking at 82 targets, 42 receptions, 604 yards, 4 touchdowns. Very, you know, okay wide receiver line as a rookie. But 34 carries, 204 yards, and 2 touchdowns. We're looking at 800 yards total, 6 touchdowns. And I think, like I said, he's a slow burn, somebody that's going to get better over time. Then Jonathan Mingo. Jonathan Mingo is going to be their guy that they move around the most. He played 30% of his snaps in the slot last year. So Mingo and Thielen were the guys playing the slot, right? And I think Mingo's going to take more of that away from Thielen as Thielen is 34 years old and dropping off, right? So I think even if Thielen just falls off the face of the earth, if you had a concern of like, oh, well, if Thielen falls off, is Deontay then going to be forced into the slot? No, Mingo will be the slot guy because they want that the best wide receiver, they want them outside, generally speaking. They bring them inside for stuff, yes, of course, move them around for matchups, but generally you want them outside as their most utilized role. So Deontay Johnson's not going to lose that. No matter what happens to Thielen, Mingo is going to be the guy that goes inside and outside. He's going to, when they don't want Xavier Leggett on the field for something, and he doesn't have the playbook down yet exactly, and whatever, and they have Thielen in the slot, they want to put Mingo outside, he'll do that sometimes, and sometimes he'll be in the slot. So he's somebody that's going to be everywhere. I think that, you know, with his 18% target share last year and not really doing too much with it, we can't expect that to continue. Also, there's more target competition than he had last year, of course. So, with some flashes that he showed, right? And I think when I look at Mingo, I'm going to give you guys a basketball reference real quick. I grew up playing basketball, played high school varsity, stuff like that. Like, I'm a big basketball guy. I enjoy watching football way more. But just to give you guys a comparison, Jonathan Mingo, to me, is going to be the sixth man of this wide receiver group, right? And the sixth man in basketball is the guy who plays just as much as the starting five, and he plays a lot of different places. Like, the sixth man is usually, depending on what kind of basketball team you run, but usually the sixth man is somebody that can come in and play point guard or shooting guard and is rotating between giving those two people relief and ends up playing just as much as them, right? And then if you're somebody that emphasizes bigs, it's usually a big guy that rotates between power forward and center. But nevertheless, Jonathan Mingo is going to be the sixth man of this wide receiver group playing. When you look at the end of the year, which wide receivers have the most snaps, I would not be surprised if Mingo has more snaps than everyone other than Deontay. So he's an interesting guy that nobody is going to look at all, right? Everyone's going to look at the new weapons that they brought in. Everyone's going to think of Thielen above Mingo. And I don't really prescribe to, hey, this offense has the juice that I'm looking for to invest in a sleeper. But in those super deep leagues, and I'm talking super deep, like I'm in a 32-man league, right, for example. If you're in a league like that, Jonathan Mingo might be somebody interesting because the sixth man is always slept on because he's not a starter, even though a lot of times he produces more than the starters. And that's what Mingo is going to provide for this team, in my opinion. I have him projected for 76 targets, 44 receptions, 464 yards, 3 touchdowns. If I'm wrong on the touchdowns, he could end up being better than some of the other wide receivers we've talked about. I don't really have too much interest in him unless I'm in those deep leagues, but it's just something to keep in mind. Now let's talk about Jonathan Brooks. I'm not going to break down Jatavion Sanders. I don't think he's going to get high utilization right away. I think he's going to be somebody that helps Bryce Young more than he can really do anything for fantasy. But Jonathan Brooks, right? Highest drafted running back in this class. He's going to get receiving work. Likely not going to get it right away, but he will get receiving work. Chuba Hubbard, Miles Sanders, if they're on the team, will also get some receiving work, so that's going to hurt Brooks a little bit. I'm only going to give Jonathan Brooks 7% of the targets, despite what you think about Canales targeting the running back position, and he does like to use the running back. It's usually because he puts it all on one running back. He doesn't use the running back position as much as you would expect as a whole. If you look at Rashad White, for example, Rashad White had like 12% of the targets, and the Seattle running back room was around that. I think they might have been a little bit more together when Canales was there, but I don't think that Brooks right away is just going to be taking everything. I mean, we can't forget that he's coming off an ACL tear in November, right? If he tore his ACL in November, he's not going to be 100% in less than a year ready to go, taking the whole workload and taking it at a high clip of efficiency. And that, I think, is the big thing we need to beware of. As much as you love Jonathan Brooks, just because they say he is 100% ready to go does not mean that he is 100% in terms of performing as he has performed in the past. Okay, so keep that in mind, because I actually think that Jonathan Brooks will not be a good value in redraft. I like him. I took him in a dynasty draft. If you're in the Discord, I just posted I took him at 108 in a league I really needed a running back, and then I slammed wide receiver the rest of the way through the draft. And, you know, Jonathan Brooks, I like him for the future. He's also young. You know, he's a young guy. He's got plenty to go. He hasn't taken a lot of carries in college, so he's young in terms of wear and tear, and he's young in terms of age. So you've got a lot going for you here, and you've got high investment. You've got a team that should be ascending, but don't expect it this year, okay? He might be a good trade target after this year, because I think he's going to lack in efficiency, and he's not going to get the whole workload, as he will in the future. I'm only projecting him to get 65% of the running back carries. That's going to improve next year. Next year, I'll probably have him at 75%, 80%, but right now, I'm putting him at 65% because of the fact that he's a rookie. They're still bringing in extra people like Rashad Penny. And despite Miles Sanders being there, which he might be moved, and Chuba Hubbard being there, they're still bringing in a fourth running back. So it should make you be thinking like, all right, you know, they're not 100% ready to just go all in with him right away. So because of that, I'm a little bit hesitant in redraft. Also, the offense is not going to be good enough to get much scoring available for Brooks, so that's another thing that might disappoint, right? You're looking at a running back that, even if I'm wrong on the volume, right, I don't think I'm going to be wrong on the efficiency. The team is still not deadly enough for him to be very efficient, especially if he doesn't have the 100% health and talent because he's still recovering from an ACL. So, and, you know, even confidence is a big thing that you kind of lose in that first year back. I'm giving him 6 of the 10 running back touchdowns. I'm only giving him 4.1 yards per carry. Chuba Hubbard last year, 3.8 or 3.9. Miles Sanders was like 3.5, 3.6. Even the year before that, like the Panthers running game has been atrocious. Since McCaffrey left, they have had a terrible situation available for the running backs and just not been able to get anything going on the ground. I think the running game will improve. The two guards are there. Canales is there. The offense getting better in terms of the passing game will help the running game improve, but Brooks himself also is still recovering. So 4.1 yards per carry. I think, you know, Chuba, he might be able to get like 4.3, but it's still not going to be a highly efficient offense. I'm giving him 228 carries. That's 65% of the running back carries, 228, 935 rushing yards, 6 touchdowns. And then in the receiving game, 38 targets, 30 receptions, 198 receiving yards, excuse me, and 1 receiving touchdown. That's 10.9 points per game. Now, there is upside if he's like Breece Hall and is super efficient somehow after an ACL tear, or he gets way more work than I'm projecting, but I doubt it. I think your ceiling projection for Jonathan Brooks is maybe 14.5 points per game, which would put him at a RB2. And right now I have him at 10.9. That's a flex guy. That's a outside of the top 24 running backs barely guy. And if you think about it, there's a lot of running backs with more juice than him, with more receiving work than him, in offenses that will have a lot more touchdowns and touchdown opportunities and, you know, get more receiving work, or I'm sorry, more efficiency than what he will be doing a year out from a ACL tear. Discord questions. Can Bryce Young be the player he was drafted to be? I think so. Now, it depends on what your opinion was of what he was being drafted to be. If he was being drafted to be a top 5 quarterback, no. If he was being drafted to be a very, very good game manager, like a la Kirk Cousins, you know, something like that, like a Kirk Cousins, Brock Purdy, I think he can get to that level. And I think he can lead this team. What is Jonathan Brooks' outlook with the other running backs? Like I said, I'm very, very skeptical for this year, but I love the guy, and I think he's a good dynasty asset, and I think he'll be a good buy low next year if he does what I'm expecting, and people get frustrated with him and think that that's just him and forget to add the context. Just like Javonte. I mean, Javonte, it wasn't just an ACL tear. I mean, Javonte was dealing with a lot more than that, but people completely are writing him off now in his recovery year from that. And, you know, that might happen to Jonathan Brooks and he might be a good buy low. So his outlook for me is not great this year, but good really good going forward. Thoughts on Bryce Young's new weapons? I think he's got a good cast. I think they're well balanced. They're missing one final piece, but I do like it. I think the biggest focus of this team going forward to help Bryce Young is going to be the offensive line. I think Deontay Johnson is good enough. He's generally, you want him to be your number two, but maybe Extra Large can develop into that number one, right? Deontay could be your route runner on the outside. XL could be your guy who takes these like gimmicky stuff, but also is a good deep ball guy, good 50-50 guy, and as he develops, really solid over the field and just can become an overall well-rounded wide receiver. And then they're just going to have to figure out slot. If Mingo is not the guy, that's going to be what they're missing, right? And it could either be deciding to move Deontay back into the slot if they get somebody that's much better than him, because Deontay has done that in the past, in the beginning of his career, or they could just find a really good slot and leave him in the slot if XL is really your best wide receiver. So I think that they have a good cast going. Jatavion Sanders is good. I wasn't as high on him as other people. I think I kind of liked the receiving abilities of Eric Awe and Jaheim Bell and Dallin Holker more than Jatavion Sanders, but Jatavion Sanders is not bad at all. He's a good tight end. We'll see what they do with him. But with that said, that's the Carolina Panthers guys. Basically, if it's not clear, right, the guys that I'm drafting out of this team for redraft, I think Xavier Leggett will probably be a good last round pick. That's a good option there, depending on how much they utilize him as a runner and how much they integrate him in that way with scheme touches. Deontay Johnson, I think, depending on how my team build is going, I'll probably value that high floor of a wide receiver three or a flex play for me, depending on how the league is structured. But Deontay Johnson, I'll definitely be drafting if he kind of comes down a little bit. Like right now, I think he's going sixth round. So that's a little too rich for me. If he comes down to like eighth round, then I'll be all over him. And I think that's very reasonable, because if this run game starts looking good at all in the preseason, or a lot of hype starts coming out about Xavier Leggett, which you know the hype is going to come out, then it's probably going to drop Deontay a little bit. So then he'll be somebody that I'll be interested in for sure. With that said, thank you guys for listening. And until next time, peace.